So I want to study, look at the, today's the 17th of, oh, it's not, it's the 18th of Thomas. We're celebrating the 17th of Thomas today. So commemorating, celebrating, either way. So now, question, do you know the Hebrew months?
Yeah.
Don't be, it's fine, that's what we're here to learn. So not, can't learn if we don't, okay, so the months of the year, it goes, the Jewish calendar started when the Jews were coming out of Egypt. So God's first commandment to the Jewish people, which he gave to Moses, and even eventually was conveyed to us, is the fact that the first, we'll have this idea of a new month based on how the moon goes. The lunar calendar, we have a hybrid calendar. It's based on the moon, the cycles of the moon, and at the same time, we always, you know, the difference between the way the sun goes, the solar calendar, and the lunar calendar, the year is off by 11 days.
Mm-hmm.
So if we were to just have a straight lunar calendar, we'd be like Pesach, Passover, would keep on, wouldn't be in the spring, it would be changing. It would be, you know, you could end up in January, because that's what happens in Islam. Islam, because it's straight lunar, it actually, that 11-day difference, over time, it moves, so it's different parts of the year they have the Ramadan.
Okay.
We, on the other hand, say Passover must be in the spring. It says it's the holiday of spring. So what we end up doing is we have this very complex calendar over a 19-year cycle. We have 7 leap years, something like that. So what that does is that we add a month in a leap year so that it guarantees that we have Passover in the spring. So, but the first month of that cycle of the when Passover is called Nisan. So that's month 1, Iyar, it's 2, Sivan, Nisan Iyar, Sivan, Tammuz. So we're in the fourth month. This is considered the fourth month, Tammuz. Av is the fifth month, 6 is Elul, etc., etc. Rosh Hashanah comes in Tishrei.
So why doesn't it start with Rosh Hashanah?
Because the whole idea would be the focus of all of Judaism would be, or the basis of everything is when we left Egypt. So Nisan becomes the Rosh Chodeshim, it's the beginning of the months of the year. Okay, it's it really becomes essential, even though we have Rosh Hashanah, which is the beginning of the year. Right, so we have this like, and that's it's really actually the flip side. If Nisan's number 1, Rosh Hashanah is in Tishrei, is the 7th. It's if you have 12 months, right? So it's like it's almost like the other part of the cycle, right? Mm-hmm. It's the flip side of the year. There is a Talmudic thing that talks about the question of when exactly the world was created. There are two opinions. One opinion is that it was created in Nisan, and one is that it was created in Tishrei, which is when we celebrate Rosh Hashanah. So you have. Now, how is it possible? How can you have two opinions that are viable if the world was created at a certain time? Like, it was considered, we actually said it was created in Tishrei.
Mm-hmm.
So then how can you give us this whole Nisan thing? Some say that it's the idea that God's beginning of the thought process of creating the world was in Nisan. Okay? Or you could say that it's tied to this idea of when the Jews came out of Egypt. Okay, but this is our calendar. Now, we're in Tammuz. We're in the fourth month. Here, we're going to read over here. This is from the passage in the Talmud, in Ta'anit, which talks about the 5 things that happened on the 17th of Tammuz. Okay? It says here that 5 things, the Mishnah discusses the 5 major communal fast days, and then it says within that, it talks about 5 things, 5 calamitous matters occurred to our forefather on the 17th of Tammuz, and 5 other disasters happened on the 9th of Av. So what happened on the 17th of Tammuz? So, first, the tablets were broken by Moses when he saw the Jews had made a golden calf. The daily offering was nullified by the Roman authority. You see it's over here in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the Roman authorities, The daily offering was nullified by the Roman authorities and was never sacrificed again. So it actually goes back from the time when the Jews were in the desert. They started giving a daily sacrifice called the Tamid. And the Tamid means always. Okay, always meant that literally from the time it started, back in the times when the Jews were in the desert and they started a tabernacle and they started sacrificing on a daily basis, that from then on, every single day, they had this sacrifice until thousands of years later when the Romans came and they stopped them. That was the first time it had stopped in a thousand years that they had a continuous daily sacrifice. So it was on the 17th of Tammuz that it had stopped. Also, the city, the walls of Jerusalem were breached. Now, this is actually referring to two times because there were two temples. Both times, it happened in the month of Tammuz. It actually didn't happen on the 17th of Tammuz. The first time was on the 9th, and the second time was on the 17th. They asked the question, so why do we say, okay, you can't really, you know, we're going to try to like consolidate days because we can't like have, you know, to have two fast days on the ninth of Tammuz and the 7th. All right, so we'll consolidate it to 17th. Okay. It says that Apostolos publicly burned a Torah scroll, and that Torah scroll was, so going back to the times when the Jews were in the desert, when Moses wrote the final Torah scroll that we have today, he wrote 13. So these were the 13 original scrolls. Apostolos publicly burned a Torah scroll is referring to one of those original. So that's like a very, terrible thing. And the last one is that Menashe placed an idol in the sanctuary. So you have 17, on the 17th of Tammuz, you have these five things that occurred. The ones, if you asked someone on the street, like, what happened on the 17th of Tammuz, they would say the walls were breached. That's like the famous one. But the truth is that the thing that probably was the worst thing to happen to us historically was the breaking of the tablets. Okay, in terms of, not to say that the other things were good things, but in terms of, like, when anything happens for the first time, we look at it and we say, this is like a fundamental, event. The breaking of the tablets is really like the most, in terms of the calamity, in terms of the damage that occurred on that day, the worst thing that has happened to us in our history. Now, just looking forward, so now, when did this happen? The Jews come out of Egypt, Nisan, right? In the springtime. They go into the desert, and from the day that they left, second day from the left, 50 days later, they're at Mount Sinai. So it goes Nisan, Iyar, Sivan. On the 6th of Sivan, they're standing at the mountain. God comes down. He reveals himself. He tells the Jewish people, I'm the God who took you out of Egypt, and he conveys the Ten Commandments. Moses is there, and now from the 6th of Sivan, 40 days, Moses is supposed to, he's working with God on putting the tablets together. Now God's giving over the tablets, okay? And 40 days later, he's supposed to come down. What happens is he's late. This is this paragraph here, okay? So this is the discussion we'll talk about in a second, but I'm going to get back to it in a second. And then he's late, golden calf. Now, after the golden calf, so he comes down. What day is it that he comes down? 17th of Tammuz. He sees the Jewish people dancing around the golden calf. He breaks the tablets. Okay, shattering of the tablets. 17th of Tammuz. Then, just to show you, like, the further it goes down, so from there, he's arguing with God in this depiction here in Exodus 32, which we will go through. I will look at it in a second. And he goes back to God, asks for forgiveness, and then the process of 40 days, another 40 days, culminates with Yom Kippur. Okay? And that's where he gets the second set of tablets. That becomes a day of atonement. Okay? So the history of You understand, like, this is like the beginning of, like, what we do today.
40 days from today?
No, so 40 days plus another 40. So what happens, the first 40 gets us to the first month, the first day of Elul, or the 28th day of Av. It's like around that time, right there. What happened then is God said to Moses, okay, I forgive the Jewish people, now let's make a second set of tablets. Solach Hashni, Luchos Avanu Karishonim. Make a second set of tablets, like the first ones. And then he goes back up the mountain, and they work on that for 40 days. So it's 40 plus another 40.
So 80
days from today is Yom Kippur. Okay? And why does that become, so now the Torah that we have, does that get you nervous?
It's like...
It's like, right? It's around the corner.
It's holiday season.
Right, exactly. So what happens is that basically, you see this idea that how everything's connected, but that the Torah that we have today is the second set of tablets, okay? Whatever was in that first one is the second, and then Yom Kippur becomes the day that we receive the Torah, plus we get atonement, okay? Now, let's continue. I'm just going to continue on this line. So it comes, that is now, that's the 10th of Tishrei. Come all the way around, there's a second holiday of first, the first celebration of Pesach, Passover, that next year. And then, so that's Nisan. The 5 months later, Moses sends the spies into the land on Av, the 9th of Av. Or no, I'm sorry, mistake. He doesn't send them the 9th of Av. He sends them 40 days before that. So he sends them, when would that be? He sends them also in Tammuz, mm-hmm. Right? I think it's the first of Tammuz. He sends the spies in, okay? They go in there and they walk around the land for 40 days. They come out on Tisha B'Av and they give the negative report about the land. And the Jewish people fall apart, they cry. And God says, you cried for no reason? I'll make sure in history that this day will become a day of crying. Okay? And that's the second part here. On the 9th? Yeah.
Can I ask a question on the middle part?
Sure.
The city walls of Jerusalem were breached. Mm-hmm. Can you elaborate on that?
Sure.
There was no war.
No, right? So what happened was, there are two temples. It's referring to both temples. Mm-hmm. On the 17th of Tammuz, we had different enemies in each period. Okay, but each time they came, in the month of Tammuz, one was on the 9th and one was on the 17th, they broke through the walls of Jerusalem. They didn't destroy the temple yet, but the walls were breached. So that means that the Babylonian exile and also the Roman exile, both times when they came and they breached the walls, it came out on this time of the year. So that's what it's referring
to. Which would eventually lead to the destruction. It was like one of the first steps.
It was the beginning of the end.
Okay.
That's why it becomes, and you know, it's like, it's almost like you have this relationship between the 17th of Tammuz and the 9th of Av. We end up now celebrating as the 3 weeks. 3 weeks from mm-hmm. from the 17th to the 9th. But you see this idea of this relationship between like a beginning of a problem and kind of like their bookends. Mm-hmm. So the shattering of the tablets when Moses came down and broke the tablets, and then the spies coming back on the 9th of Av and giving over a negative report about the land of Israel, so that now God says, okay, that's how you feel? You went around the land for 40 days now, looking at things in a negative way, because how do I know? Because when you came out, you give us this negative report, so I'm going to punish you, and all of you that said that this is a terrible place, da da da, we're all going to die, no problem. You're not coming into the land. For 40 years, you're going to stay in the desert. It ended up being like 38, really, but the Jews end up being in the desert for 40 years. That entire generation, those who were from the ages of 20 to 60, who should have gone in, ended up dying in the desert, and the next generation went into the land. Okay? But when did that happen? On the 9th of Av. So you have, here, just to read this, on the 9th of Av, it was decreed upon our ancestors that they would all die in the wilderness and not enter Eretz Israel, the land of Israel. And what else happened? The temple was destroyed the first time in the days of Nebuchadnezzar. That was the Babylonians. And the second time by the Romans. Okay, so you have two temple destructions. And what is the temple? The temple really, it symbolizes the like an actualization of a close relationship between us and God, right? You have a house. For God. I mean, God's everywhere. What do you mean a house for God? It means that there is like a symbol of God's close relationship to the Jewish people. So the destruction of the temple is like really throws the question, or really makes it, you know, symbolically, you know, are we connected to God? Like, is God's relationship with the Jewish people strong? You know, so it, we call this as a very dark period because of that. You know, it's symbolically, you know, very obviously has a very, you know, shows the very negative outward relationship that we have with God. And then additional stuff, the Beitar was captured. Now, Beitar was one of the very big Jewish city. The city of Jerusalem was plowed. So that also, and as it says, is a sign that it would never be rebuilt. So you have this, so it ends up becoming like symbolically a very dark period. Okay, so we have, so quick summary, we're talking about today's the 18th of Tammuz, but we're commemorating the 17th of Tammuz. And the things that occurred, so we have five things that occurred on the 17th of Tammuz, and five things that occurred on Tisha B'Av. Now, the way we end up commemorating today is that the 17th of Tammuz begins a period of 3 weeks that culminates with the 9th of Av. This whole segment, really going back to like the destruction of the temple, if the temple symbolizes this close relationship, it actually is like a symbol, like, hey, you know, that, I'll point to that house and say, that's the house of God. That's the place where God symbolically shows his close relationship to the Jewish people. It's actually when they got into the temple, what did they find in the Holy of Holies? Is that you had the Aron, right? The ark that held the tablets. And above it, you had the cherubs, right? It was a female. And when the Jewish people and God were, you know, close and things were working right, they'd face each other. And then when things were not good, they actually would turn away from each other. The wild thing was, is that when they came in to destroy the first temple, and they found the ark, and you'd think that if the temple is being destroyed, that the relationship between God and the Jewish people was not in a good place, right? They were actually hugging. Why? Because the symbolism was that, in a way, God was saying, yes, it's true that I'm destroying the temple because Jewish people haven't been acting properly. Things have kind of fallen apart, but my love and concern for the Jewish people is as great as ever. So, but this at the same time, so like we always have this dichotomy in Judaism. It's always like nothing is one-sided. There's always multiple things going on at the same time. So at the darkest moment in our history, you have that symbol of like God's love for us, the eternal love that God has for the Jewish people. So here his temple is being destroyed, the symbol of our close relationship with God. You have the cherubs hugging, you know. So that's it's an interesting, you know, type of thing.
And that happened on
that
17th?
No, that when they found that, that was on the 9th of Av. That was at the time of destruction. So, in a certain sense, like what we're entering into is like the darkest. We're entering into the darkest period of our calendar year. Okay, so like it's a very. So I'm looking at this is the depiction of what happened at the time of the breaking of the tablets. So the tablets are broken. So just give a quick history. The Jews come out of Egypt at Nisan, and then they get to the Mount Sinai on the 6th of Sivan, which is 50 days from the time that they left Egypt. And then they experience the revelation. God comes down and reveals himself. What that means, how we understand that, I mean, we could talk about that. It's like an incredible, momentous event of God's revelation. And then Moses stays there with God in the mountain for 40 days. And then it says that he was late, or at least the people thought he was late. And so they get antsy. And the question, so we have to understand, and this is an open question, we have to try to understand exactly what went wrong, or what's going on with the Jewish people, especially if you think about it. 40 days earlier, they experienced the revelation. So they experienced God. God came. Hi, I'm God. Now this is, you know, just to like take a step back. Imagine, this is hard for us to imagine, a non-physical being, the creator of the universe, of the world, this all-powerful presence reveals itself to us. Says that the entire creation said, when God said, I'm God, took you out from Egypt, that the entire creation said that. The whole, it's everything is God, so that the whole universe said that, was speaking. It's like, you know, for us it's like thunder, lightning, you know, it's like it's a show of force, but you know, it's hard for us to get to wrap our heads around this, what the revelation was. But whatever it was so powerful that we met God, and it was too much for us. So we said, after the first two commandments, we said to Moses, okay, we thought it was a good idea. You become the interpreter for us. Like you get between. We can't hear God direct. It's too much for us. So you can imagine, it's an incredible event. They worship, they witness God, they experience God firsthand, and then 40 days later, they're making an idol. It's so hard to imagine like what the breakdown was. Okay, so that in turn leads to, we have to see exactly, so why did Moses break the tablets? And what were these tablets? Right, so are these just, you know, like, you know, he took, I mean, it's you know, we've been to synagogue, you see a Torah scroll. Can you imagine them taking the Torah scroll and throwing it on the ground? I mean, right? We would like all shudder, like, you know, it's like, so here the tablets were on a much higher level. These are the tablets that were created by God. These are completely, you know, this is incredibly holy. The way they describe it, the way it was like, you know, the letters were hanging in ways, and it contained all of knowledge. And I mean, there's so many different. You're talking about something, you know, otherworldly, and then he sees something, and feels compelled to break it. What these on the most basic level. Here are these tablets that really symbolize God having a direct communication to us. Like, it's like there's no, it's unadulterated God coming to us. Everything that we have today is filtered, right? Here's coming straight. And if, it says that if we would have gotten this and received it straight, death would have stopped, pain, suffering. It would have been the messianic era. Life would be perfect. Okay, so because that movie,
those ifs, right?
Right, but the idea of that, but so that we're, but this idea of something that's so clear, we have so much fragmentation and lack of clarity and things of that nature. Here we're saying, we get this, everything's crystal clear, and then death goes away and all the suffering goes away. So, but it's all lost when he breaks those tablets. And so Moses saw something that said, this can't be transmitted. I cannot give over this because there's something already that's been damaged. Okay, so what did he see? It's here. It's on the sheet of paper, we have the answer to some of these questions, okay? So first things first, it says that the people saw that Moses was so long coming down from the mountain. The people gathered against Aaron and said to him, come, make us a God who shall go before us. For that man Moses who brought us up from the land of Egypt, we do not know what has happened to him. Now, so the first thing that we have to look at is that it says in the first line here, when the people saw that Moses was coming down, was so long in coming down, meaning he was late, right? What does it mean that they saw that he was late? In general, we always look in the Torah, especially the five books, you look for similar ideas of verbiage that's similar to things that we've seen before, that gives us some kind of sense of a deeper understanding to what things are. So if I want to see what the first thing that it's mentioned in the Torah, it gives me a little bit of insight. So where's the first time that we see a person seeing something and that leads to disaster? Is that, yes, exactly. It says that Chava, Eve, saw the tree. She saw the tree. You see this idea of seeing. And by the way, where's another place that we just mentioned now, going to later on, where people see things the wrong way? We mentioned it. Where people see things the wrong way that also led to disaster. No. I'm going back to now to the history of the Jews in the desert, or when they go into the land of Israel as spies, right? And they walked around and they saw things also the wrong way. Okay, so that there's this idea, and by the way, this is like one of the takeaways for us today, here, now, in 2018, is that the one thing that you see, Eve, the Jewish people, multiple times, that when we see things, the way we see things makes a big difference. And and how we want to, and if we see things a certain way, meaning you could see things in multiple ways. And that's like my teacher years ago said, he goes, you know, he and his wife, they'll go somewhere, and he said, if you interview us after the fact, say, so what do you see at the Kaplan's house? Right? So what you see and and your husband sees and what you see and what Lama sees, and all that, we all see something different. Why is that? It's because we all are looking for something different. We look at the world in our own unique ways, and we'll see things because what interests us. If I like color, so then when I come out, I'll say, well, the color of the dining room was this and the living room was that, or they had a fireplace, they have a piano, you know, so all of it, it's filtered because of what we want to see, right? It's a very basic human nature, is that we see what we want to see. And so here, already, they saw that Moses was so long in coming down, he was late, because there was something there that was, you know, they were already looking for something. The fact is, now, again, that could be, again, a reflection of human nature, that they were looking for maybe something to go wrong. You know, there are people that always want to see something going wrong. You know, So they supposedly had told them 40 days, and the question then became, from when should they have started counting? Something like that. So it's a miscalculation.
How many in the morning on the 40th?
Right, exactly. Right. So this is there's a lot of room. There's room for disaster, right? It's
right.
Like, could you adjust it exact as to when you were coming? So that, but you see here that there's something, right? So now Aaron said to them, So what does Aaron see? Now I'm telling you things that are between the lines, is that the commentaries tell us that they came as a belligerent mob, and the first thing is that they Hor, who's Hor is Miriam's son, wanted to stop them. He protested this because he saw that this was going to go wrong, and they killed him. So then Aaron's like, okay, if I don't, you know, placate them, they're going to kill me too. So Aaron said to them in verse 2, take off the gold rings that are on the ears of your wives, your sons, and your daughters, and bring them to me. And so he thought that this was a great way, like, of delaying, right? Because no one's going to give up their jewelry. And sure enough, and the people took off the gold rings that were in the ears and brought them to Aaron. So that was not a problem. No time delay there. And boom, they were there. And so this he took from them and cast in a mold and made it into a molten calf. And they exclaimed, this is your God, O Israel, who brought you out of the land of Egypt. So here it's like, how could they go from witnessing God to having this golden calf, molten calf coming out and proclaiming that this is the God of Israel who brought you out of the land of right, so this is already so hard to get our hands. Like, how did they go from A to, it's like, to Z? It's like in such a short period of time. So one thing that's there is, well, let's go back to, you know, any type of sin, whether it be Eve, right, when she and Adam ate from the tree, and in general, what it becomes or let me contrast it, is that when after the Jews received the revelation, from revelation till this golden calf experience, so it actually says that death went away. There was no death. That whatever damage that occurred from the first initial eating from the tree of, at the time, that first sin, so now what happened there? That was the advent of death. Death was introduced based after that first sin. So now they're at the revelation. Sin goes away. It returns after the sin here. So what's happened in between that takes away sin? Or why does death come, and then why does death... what's going on here? Like, what would you think the driver here is? So before the sin, Adam and Eve were supposed to live forever. They sin, death's introduced. Now we fast forward. The Jewish people come out of Egypt. They have a revelation.
But, excuse me, I'm sorry. When was death introduced at that point?
Because where? In terms of the Adam beginning?
Eve.
After the sin, death. That's when death comes into play. Until then, they basically say, it says there that if it weren't for that, they would have lived forever. They were eternal beings. Okay? Through the sin of the tree, this is a much deeper. I'm just giving you very. I'm giving, but on the simplest level, we'll be able to maybe get something interesting out of it. Okay, death is introduced. Then we fast forward. Jews come out of Egypt. They come to Mount Sinai. They have a revelation. God comes to them. He opens up the kimono, so to speak, and he shows them, "Here I am." Death goes away. And then 39 days later, when they sin with the golden calf, right back again. So, what do you think? What's going on? It's not. I mean, if you came up with the answer, I'd be like, "Wow, that's impressive." I mean, I don't know. But we're gonna try to. So we'll go back to the sin of Adam and Eve. Okay, let's talk about that. So, when Adam and Eve are there in the garden, so the nature of our, the human nature is completely different. How we are and how they were is completely different. What we are now is post-sin. So before, I can show you in the words of, you can have a class on this, but I'll tell you like outside, that the idea of subjectivity, the idea of there's objective truth, and then the things that are subjective, right? So when we become more self-involved, that's when we start seeing what we want to see, right? That's more subjectivity, right? When we can reach a place of complete objective truth, there's no death. But we know that that the nature of our existence is a subjective existence, right? That's how so we are living in the post-sin mode of subjectivity. So we don't even realize it, because that's where we are. When the Jews were at Mount Sinai and God revealed himself, we literally like went outside of ourselves. We were able to attain a level of objectivity, objective truth. That's what happened there. But you see that as man, meaning as humankind is our creation, we're complex. We're this fusion of the physical and the spiritual. So there's a physical part of us that creates that subjectivity and that pull.
So I kind of think that it's like, just keeps going back, and surely yesterday the rabbi was kind of talking about this too, like there's that belief, right? If we have, I shouldn't say if, we have full faith in God, then why do we have to plan our lives and our career? If I keep saying the word if, but if the God knows all and knows our destiny, then why right? But that's
no. So no, no, no. Okay. So wait. So right. No. So okay.
That's what I'm thinking.
So wait. So I want to tell you. So the most important, the most important.
Right with the tablets. Okay. But with the golden cap, but there's the free will, right?
Right. So the free, but so that's great. So it, the Rabbeinu Ba'achya, there was a he lived in the 1400s, late 1300s. Okay. He was a student of, he comes from Nachmanides, like, he's a Kabbalistic, he comes from a Kabbalistic school. His very profound writings. So he has an intro to each parsha. Each parsha has an introduction that is, when you read it, you go, what the heck is he talking about? It's out there. And then you're like, wow, it's exactly what the point of the parsha was. His intro to Parshat Shlach, that's when Moses sends the spies. He has a whole thing there. He talks about that we are obligated, meaning that we have to max out all of our abilities. So to the point of literally maxing out all of our efforts. And only then, at that point, God's, you know, providence kicks in. So that means, for example, you know, let's use this analogy. The Israeli army, right? The Air Force. They have one of the best, if not the best, Air Force in the world. But they believe in God, you know. So why do they have to go and get the next, this, what is it, the next is an F-32, 20, whatever the newest, rely on the F-18s that are the old, right?
Right.
So Rabbeinu Bachi says, no, we're obligated to max out our abilities, and if we don't, that idea of the providence, you can't sit back and eat bonbons, so to speak. You got to like actually max out the effort. That it's that kind of crazy relationship. And all you can also at the same time say that whatever God knows what will be in the future, that doesn't have any impact on what we're doing over here. And it, then because God gave us the space, like a parent gives a child, like, you know,
yeah.
Go do your thing,
right.
But right, so that exists, that space exists for, but Rabbeinu Bachi says like that we're obligated to max out our abilities to the nth degree, has nothing to, they're two separate, they run parallel, but completely separate. So here, we're saying that they reached a point of complete objectivity, but there's something, there's a pull in our nature that makes us want to create something that's more physical. There, I mean, we don't necessarily understand the pull for idol worship. Like, we're not, like, I don't think we as a, you know, today we've come, it actually says that the desire for idol worship has kind of been removed. So, it's hard for us to relate to like bowing to a golden calf,
right.
That. But to have a physical presence or a manifestation of God, now this is the crazy thing. The rabbis say that the tabernacle and the temple comes and replaces, or the ark is a replacement for the golden calf.
That's crazy.
Okay, so that. There's something, meaning, so there's a, you know, there's, it's, this is complicated, that they wanted to have a physical manifestation of God, but you see that there's this pull, and that when we get more physical, though, we do become more subjective. In the most physical realm, things are subjective. You can't have objectivity. There's always multiple, and that's part of, like, by the way, the whole Talmud up there is back and forth discussions between different positions. This one says that, and this one says that, and they're arguing about the same, you know, something that should be have an objective truth. And the answer is no. In the physical world, objectivity is almost, it's almost impossible to have 100% objective truth. There's both sides are the same in the physical. So that's where we come into this type of this struggle. But then what happens is that we lose this thing. So now the question is. So, we have the potential to receive God's unadulterated, unfiltered word. And so then what goes, why does Moses break those tablets? I want to fast forward there, okay? So, it's interesting. God says to Moses, he says to him, he says, listen, your people have sinned. So now Moses and God are tight, right? He believes God. You would say Moses believes God, right? So if he hears then, before he comes down, that they'd sinned, why doesn't he break the tablets there?
So he's coming down with the tablets.
But God already told him that they'd sinned. So what changes?
But he didn't see it.
Oh, they already made the golden calf while he was
up there. Yeah, look what happens. Look at number 7. And the Lord spoke to Moses, "Hurry down, for your people, whom you brought out of the land of Egypt, they acted basely. They've been quick to turn aside from the way that I enjoined upon them, and they have made themselves a molten calf and bowed low to it and sacrificed to it, saying, 'This is your God, O Israel, who brought you out of the land of Egypt.'" The Lord further said to Moses, "I see that this is a stiff-necked people. Now let me be, that my anger may blaze forth against them, and that I may destroy them and make you a great nation." So at that point, Moses is being told that they've sinned. Why not break the tablets then, right? But he doesn't. But Moses implored the Lord his God, saying, Let not your anger, O Lord, blaze forth against your people, whom you delivered from the land of Egypt with great power and with your mighty hand. By the way, this is when we take out the Torah scroll on a fast day, this is what we start. We started this morning. We read from this part of where Moses asked for forgiveness. Let not the Egyptians say this. With evil intent that he delivered them, only to kill them off in the mountains and annihilate them from the face of the earth. Turn from your blazing anger and renounce the plan to punish your people. Remember your servants, Abraham, Isaac, and Israel, now how you swore to them by yourself and said to them, 'I will make your offspring as numerous as the stars of heaven, and I will give you, and I will give to your offspring this whole land which I spoke to possess forever.'" And then God said, and the Lord renounced the punishment he had planned to bring upon his people. He forgave them. I mean, that initial, like, "I want to destroy," Moses calmed him. But then what happens? Thereupon Moses turned and went down from the mountain, bearing the two tablets of the pact, tablets inscribed on both their surfaces. They were inscribed on the one side and on the other. So you see this idea. It's describing in that line the supernatural nature of these tablets, right? They had, you know, something that we can't even, you know, imagine. They were really supernatural. The tablets were God's work, and the writing of God's writing incised upon the tablets. Okay, so you see that he's holding these incredibly holy, you know, special tablets. So now, what happens? Look at 19. As soon as Moses came near the camp and saw the calf and the dancing, he became enraged. And he hurled the tablets from his hands and shattered them at the foot of the mountain. So that's when he breaks the tablets. So then, this is the question. I mean, he should have. So Alana said, it's because he saw it. Until he saw it, but that means he didn't believe God?
No, you believe something, but until you see it with your own eyes, there's something different between someone telling you something and then you actually seeing it.
Okay, so that's.
How could you, you know, with God, you have such respect and fear almost. How could you break them in front of?
Oh, so you want to say because he was in front of God? That's interesting.
But you could have just left them with God.
Yeah.
God some extra time later.
Right.
I'll come back.
Or maybe he did it so that the people saw his anger.
Okay, so you want to say that's he wants it to be an exhibit.
Visible.
Okay, so what's interesting, by the way, there is a description. The rabbis describe that. It's like this image of God's hands holding half of, let's say you have, the tablets are 6, okay, 6 cubits. God is holding 2, Moses is holding 2, and then there's 2 in between. And they're like having a wrestling match. There's a struggle. And that Moses says something or does something that ultimately he's able to pull them away from God. So even at this point, he still insists on taking it. And then comes down. But what, if you look at the line here, tell me what he sees. Right, he sees them.
Oh, he took the calf.
But he, wait, before that, wait, go, come back to the tablets here. What did he say here? 19, and as soon as Moses came near the camp and saw the calf, and what else did he see?
And
the dancing. So, perhaps that's the issue also. Meaning, it's one thing to sin. Okay? you can sin. But what about if you celebrate and you start now? What was the dancing in Hebrew? It's mechalot. They were making circles like we do. The sign of a circle is when I go around in a circle, I'm saying that I'm entrenching myself. I'm saying that this is something circular that goes around and around, becomes like a unit of I'm actually like saying that. But not only did I do this thing, but that what I did is correct. I'm encircling it. I'm engulfing it. I'm strengthening it. Okay. So it's one thing. What God told Moses is that they sinned. Okay, they sinned. God forgive them. I see them dancing. That means that they're doubling down, and that they're enforcing the fact, right? So Moses, okay, now that's too much. On those grounds, I have to break them and shatter them. Now, what's interesting is that the reason I gave the name of this thing is the shattering of the tablets, is that what came out of that, or the tragedy of the shattering, is the fact that when things are whole and things are united, you see a oneness to things, everything's connected, there's a certain clarity. When things become shattered and you have this, there's another word in English that's escaping right now. What's the word? When you have things that are shattered, oh my gosh, what's the word? Yeah. Fragmentation. Okay, when things are fragmented, so that fragmentation, that's where you have the lack of clarity.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it's interesting that every week, every year, the parsha of Bilam, the story of Bilam, comes out around Shavuot Sabbatamos. Around
the
shadow.
Torah portion we read yesterday.
So nothing's coincidental. So there's a connection. Bilam is the prophet of the non-Jews that really counters and goes head-to-head with Moses, our greatest prophet. It says that, actually, that Bilam's prophetic abilities was even greater than Moses. Because it says that at the end of the Torah, it says that that Moses, no greater Navi, came to the Jewish people. No greater prophet came to the Jewish people. Meaning that what? That to the non-Jews, they had a prophet that was greater than Moses. Bilam. Bilam was the greatest prophet of all time. And and Bilam, his idea of, there's this idea that there's a moment that God gets angry. And that he's trying to, and if he could curse the Jewish people exactly at that moment, that would have been the end of the Jewish people. But what does it mean, the moment? It means the moment that there's a moment that God gets angry. But rather, it's that if you see the world as individual moments, if the world is seen as fragmented, and that what happens there is not connected to what happens next, everything is just like snapshots, that's Bilam. Bilam believed that there's no connection to anything. And we, on the other hand, see everything is connected. But when Moses broke the tablets, he created an opening for fragmentation. And that all that we do is we are working towards the idea of unification. The idea that God is one. That this world, that everything is connected. Like when we talk about these crazy stories where like you meet someone and like, you know, this idea of the HP moments, the Hashgacha Pratis, like this idea that you meet someone, I don't know, you have a good Hashgacha Pratis story, but the idea that you can see things that happen, you say, there's no way that could happen unless God was pushing the buttons there, right? You know, like, let's say you figure out how you guys met, right? Or how I met Alana, like, or how you met. It's like, you always, like, look back and go, wow, if it wasn't for this, that, and like, you know, you have these wild stories, because, same, like, there's something that's behind the curtain, so to speak, that's pushing things. That's the idea of unification. Fragmentation would say, it's all coincidence. Nothing is divine. That's these two things that are battling it out here. So one of the tragedies of this story is the shattering of the tablets, is the creation of fragmentation of having things so that there's a lack of connectivity. And what we struggle to get back to when we say, "Hear, O Israel, Hashem is our God, Hashem is one," that we think about the oneness that the world is all God, it's all connected, it's all unified, and everything is connected. So that the darkness of this moment that we enter into when we send to the Talmud, the breaking of the tablets and all the other things, the breaking of the wall. You see, like, this idea of, like, things being broken down.
Yeah.
Like, the fact that there was a Talmud, right? That idea of having a sacrifice that was brought every single day to show that things are continuously connected. From the time of the desert till the time of where the Romans nullified the daily offering, that's, again, it's breaking down things that are connected. Breaking the walls, that things are connected. Burning the Torah scroll that went back to Moses. The idol in the sanctuary that breaks the sanctity of the. Can you imagine? You have the temple and you bring an idol in there that breaks down the sanctity of the temple. So the day of the 17th of Tammuz is breaking down, is shattering connectivity. And then the 9th of Av, which is the other side of the coin, is the complete destruction. And it's crying for no reason. That when they came back and they gave the negative report about the land of Israel, and then it really led to crying and destruction for no reason. It didn't have to be that way. That's what you'll see on the 9th of Av. One of the themes is it didn't have to be this way. It didn't have to be this way. We're like our worst enemies. We create a lot of our own problems. I think that one of the takeaways is this idea of what happened in the 9th of Av. And it starts with also the story and the people saw. That for ourselves, like, we have to like think about, like, one of the exercises, like, how do we see things? Like, the Chavetz Chaim, he passed away in the 1930s. He was a great, incredible leader of the Jewish people. One of the major things that he took on was that we're not careful of how we speak about others. And we end up speaking negative about other people. And it all starts with how we see people. It's like the part of the same theme, that if we're able to, like, work on how we look at things, if we see things in a positive light, if we look for the good things, that we'll end up seeing good things. And that on our basic level, how we see things is how we can create a better place than when the Jewish people saw things the wrong way, when we saw that Moses came late and we saw the land in a negative light. So that we have to, like, work on, especially in our day and age when things are so, like, there's so much negativity. So we should work on, you know, how we see things, how to look at things in a positive light, and that through that we continue to make efforts to grow, to learn more, to do all these things, and then to also not just keep it to ourselves, but to share it with others. And in that way, we make it a better place. And then ultimately, we'll have a rebuilding of the things that were destroyed.
Thank you.
Any questions?
Yeah, I want to know what happens after that. So how did they get the tablets back?
Ah, so this is.
I know it's the end, but
no, it's a great timeline. We went through the timeline earlier.
Oh, sorry.
No, but that's fine. It's a good review. So the Jews come out in Nisan of Egypt. 50 days later, they're in Sivan. So it's Nisan, Iyar, Sivan. 6th day of Sivan, they get the revelation. 40 days from there, 17th of Tammuz, things go bad.
40 days from the 6th of Sivan to the 17th of Tammuz?
Yes.
You have Iyar.
Nisan, Iyar, Sivan, Tammuz.
It's 40.
Okay. Right, so 6 to here.
To 17.
Okay.
Okay.
Good? So now I got to make sure it makes sense. So now we're 17th of Tammuz, break the tablets. Moses, right, then goes back up for 40 days to get forgiveness. It's at that point that God says to Moses, that's the Elul, okay? Beginning of Elul, or it's really the end of Av, he says to Moses, make a second set of tablets. Then what does he do? He goes back again for another 40 days. And he, in that 40 days, he's getting the second tablets written.
So, maybe the, this is totally out of the, maybe the problem is, or was, why they built the calf, is because Moses kept building a relationship with the God, not letting people build relationship with
that. Or maybe that's the, maybe that's the, again, this is all the beginning, this is like the roots of the of our history.
Because he keeps going back and he keeps having, obviously he was the chosen person to have that, but had they have a little bit more.
So the, I think the answer really is that we weren't really ready. That's ultimately, I think that our history. And it could be like, the, you know, it says that Adam said to God after he sinned, he said, God, I'll eat again. I'll keep on eating. Meaning what? He was saying like, this is a setup. This whole thing was a setup. I was supposed to eat because this is the nature of like, what I am as a human being is that I'm going to sin because I have this subjective side to me. And I need to do all these things, and I need to fight my inner this and that. And like, I'll do it again. Like, you know, like meaning that's my nature. So that this is part of the failings that we're talking about here are our human. It's that that's what we are. That's part of our challenge, and the history is to develop and to evolve and to. Where were we? Was it? Who said revolution? Evolution. Where was that? I think it was Rabbi on Friday night. I think Rabbi Moshe Tzvi had a speaker at our meal. And he said, it's not a revolution, it's an evolution. Mm-hmm. Like, we're here to, like, evolve. Like, that's this whole thing. Like, this, all this stuff, and in a sense, it was meant to happen because that was the nature of who we are. But now what are you going to do about it?
Right.
It's an evolution. So what happens after that? The 40 days later, they come down, Yom Kippur. The Day of Atonement becomes the Day of Atonement because that's when he brought down the second set of tablets. So, no, they weren't. No, so they weren't. There was something missing. They weren't the same because this was not all God. It was, we had man. Now, again, it was a partnership now at this point because you make the second set of tablets, it becomes man and God. All God, 100% God the first time around. The second set nature was different.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
Thank you so much.
Her sister's son's bar mitzvah in Virginia.
Oh.
So they drove up Friday.
In South Virginia, like really far.
Yeah, it's supposed to be, she's saying, an 8-hour drive. It took them like 10 hours.
Oh.
She was driving, and I guess they're driving back today, I think.
Yeah. Very nice.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
So
right.
So she wasn't there Friday night, but Larry.
You look familiar. I don't know why, like I.
I've been here for a long time.
Okay. You ever been to Beth Abraham?
They don't go there very often.
But you've seen
that.
Okay.
I saw on Facebook.
Okay.
Okay. Have a nice day.
Okay.
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm so sorry.
Great.
Sorry.
I started with the JLE.
Okay. Yes. Okay. No matter. Robert Petruska?
No, way before him. Before
Okay, so maybe if you don't want to get involved, maybe you can like have that.
we're trying to think how to do police action, but make it just for people who are you know, so like maybe so have separate tables, and you all in one big room, but like have two tables. I don't know if you're talking about it, so we went to the meeting, and that was brainstorming. So Debbie was such a part in the summer, because everyone's so busy, and people are on vacation, and want to have more, a number of people come. So we're going to do it this week, and then we said, well, it's July 4th, so maybe we are traveling. So I think we're thinking about doing it next week. And Debbie will put it on that.
And I was also working, and I have to work really late nights sometimes. So that's what I'm going to do.
Yeah. Okay, so Julie, all right, July 19th, we have another holiday. Okay, good. Because that's also, let's see, it's fun. Yeah, it's nice.
Thank you very much.
Welcome. Thank you for coming.